Welcome to the next in the series of IWA podcasts. My name is Auriel Miller and I'm the director of the IWA. This podcast is about decent work for women in Wales. Last year, in 2017, Oxfam commissioned three pieces of research to explore decent work for women in Wales. This is because we know that women are more likely to be in poverty than men, women are more likely to be in low-paid and insecure jobs than men, and the gender pay gap is still significant. It stands at 16% in Wales, and the gap between median full-time gross pay for men and women is £76.50 a week. Joining me today to explore the findings of the research and to look at the action needed to make progress are Chris Johns, Chief Executive of the Building Communities Trust, Natasha Davis, Policy and Research Lead from Huaira Teg, and Claire Evans, Senior Lecturer in Accounting and Finance at Cardiff Metropolitan University. Welcome to you all. Could you each introduce yourself, please, and give a very short summary of what your research explored? Chris.
Hi, thank you. I'm Chris Johns from Building Communities Trust. Our research was qualitative in nature, and we undertook focus groups with women in eight communities across Wales and women and men in a ninth to examine their experiences of work, mostly low-paid work, and look at the factors that were important to them when they chose what kind of jobs they went into and what made a difference in their working lives. So it was very much the real lived experience of work.
Great, thank you. Natasha?
I'm Natasha from Huaira Teg, and our piece really focused in on two sectors within the Welsh economy, domiciliary care and food and drink, as sectors that we know tend to be characterised by low pay, have a large proportion of women working in those sectors, to explore their experiences, what they regarded as fair work, whether or not they felt they were in fair work, and explore what some of those solutions to make sure that those sectors can improve the quality of work and progression opportunities for women
are. Great. Thanks very much. Claire.
Hi, Claire Evans, Cardiff Metropolitan University. The work that I performed was basically a literature review, so looking at literature generated by the UK, EU and worldwide. By reference to the literature, the review aimed to identify the policy changes required in the devolved context and ways to empower low-paid women to progress in their careers, enable them to secure a sustainable route out of poverty.
Okay, great. Thanks very much indeed. So, Claire, can I come back to you to explore a little bit about what you mean by the quality of work?
Okay. So, employment has historically been regarded as a fundamental solution to escaping poverty. And the UK has achieved notable success in reducing unemployment levels. Mm. Only a couple of days ago, there was an announcement that unemployment in Wales was at its lowest level since records began. And the number of working households in the UK continues to rise, and the proportion of children living in a household where nobody works has fallen from almost 1 in 4 to less than 1 in 6. The number of long-term workless households has also followed a downward trend since 1996. Yet, despite the raised employment rate, in-work poverty blights the lives of a significant number of people. So whilst work reduces the risk of having poverty-level income, increasingly having a job doesn't guarantee escape from poverty. And around 23% of the population in Wales live in poverty, which is behind only London and on par with the West Midlands. Every other UK country and English region have lower levels of poverty than Wales.
It's a huge proportion, isn't it, of the population. Yeah, Chris, do you want to expand a little bit more about the quality of the work and why?
Yes, one of the things we found was that what the things that were important within work were not just about pay and weren't just about formal conditions. Mm. That people's happiness and mental health was very much affected by the kind of work they did, the environment in which they worked, whether they had friends at work, whether it was a supportive atmosphere, whether they were well managed, as well as, particularly for many women who are juggling responsibilities in and out of work, how flexible it was, how easily they could fit childcare arrangements around it. And in a sense, some of those factors were as important as pay. One cluster of jobs we came across where people felt they were particularly well supported in work, despite low pay, was actually highly valued by the people concerned because they felt they had an employer where they actually enjoyed going to work. And actually, if a child was sick, people could go home and look after them, make up hours later without any sort of comeback. On the contrary, some people who were in much less flexible employment really felt that as a huge burden and pressure on them, which actually added to the stresses and strains of life, whatever the regard to pay.
Yeah, so there's an issue there around trust and respect of whoever is performing that work, but also that flexibility to take on those other sorts of responsibilities outside work.
There is, and there's also about the nature of the work as well, and the way it's managed and where decisions were taken.
Yeah, so an involvement in those decisions. Natasha, some of this burden falls disproportionately more on women, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, and I think the fact is that when we talk about decent work or fair work, women are much more likely to be in employment that doesn't meet those standards. Mm. You touched on some of the facts earlier on. They are more likely to be in low paid work. They're more likely to be in insecure work. They're more likely to work on a 0 hours contract. We still have a persistent gender pay gap. Women dominate part-time work. We know that the hourly rate of pay for full-time work averages out at over £12 an hour. For part-time work, that's below £9. So that's a clear impact on women's income.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, they're more likely to work in the sectors where we know that the quality of work perhaps isn't as good. They dominate care, retail, and we know that these sectors not only don't offer great quality employment from a sort of pay and conditions perspective, but it's really easy to get stuck in those sectors and stuck in those low-paid jobs because the progression pathways just simply aren't there.
Yeah, so there's something there about the professional recognition of those sectors as well, and you're absolutely right that people seeing that as a potential career and opportunities within those pathways. Claire, how do things in Wales compare with other parts of the UK?
Well, a problem I faced when I was researching my report was the lack of data available in the Welsh context. And the majority of data collected is based upon an aggregated basis between England and Wales, and it's difficult then to be able to sift out the Welsh figures.
Mm.
Saying that, I was able to glean some information and found that whilst there'd been no reduction in the extent of low pay in Wales for over a decade, low pay rates in Wales are consistently higher in Wales than most of the UK as a whole. Close scrutiny of the data showed that on a regional basis, the percentage of jobs paid below the national minimum wage in Wales is comparable with just a few of the other English regions, such as Yorkshire and Humber, the North West and and West Midlands. A low pay rate is strongly correlated to part-time work, and in the part-time market, over 70% of women earn less than the voluntary living wage in some parliamentary constituencies of Wales.
So that's interesting in terms of both the availability of the data, breaking this down, mm-hmm. and I spoke at something for the Royal Statistical Society a couple of weeks ago that was asking about what data is missing for Wales on the one hand. So that's there's a potential action follow-up there.
Definitely.
But there's also something there about, I wonder whether how that data correlates with, for instance, markers of deprivation across Wales as well, and so how we're seeing the connections between the data that we have across different parts of the country. Natasha, could you talk a little bit about how the Welsh Government is acknowledging and recognising this agenda and what interventions, mechanisms are already in place to respond?
Yeah, and I think since these pieces of research were done, there has been some movement in the right direction. We have seen a switch in the economic approach. The new economic action plan has moved away from focusing on those high value sectors like manufacturing and ICT, which tend to be dominated by men.
Yeah.
And we've seen the inclusion of those foundational sectors, which does include care and food and drink. The focus on those sections, according to the plan, is very much around improving pay conditions and progression opportunities within those sectors and linking it into the Welsh Government's Fair Work agenda. So that's a positive step. And they are tying the issue of fair work to being able to tap into Welsh Government funding, which again is a positive step. And of course we've got the Fair Work Commission, which follows the work of the Fair Work Board, which should have a remit looking at a whole range of issues related to fair work, but it has been stated that that will include a focus on the gender pay gap and other gender issues. So those are positive steps in the right direction. Obviously, what will be important now is making sure that rhetoric turns into meaningful action and it begins to have an impact. And I think there's a point to be made about measurements, data and indicators. The Economic Action Plan talks about inclusive growth, which is good, but there isn't necessarily a strong sense that we're going to move away from using very typical economic measures like just looking at GVA. We've got indicators that look at the quality of work to a certain extent within the wellbeing indicators. looking at, you know, the percentage of people who are happy with work or are on a full-time contract or earning at least two-thirds of the median wage. But what will be crucial will be making sure that those indicators, A, are broken down by protected characteristics, including gender, so we can see whether the situation is the same across the board. But also my question would be, well, why are we looking at those over here as part of the wellbeing agenda? Why aren't we starting to think differently about how we measure our economic success? I think that would really help to drive the agenda forward.
So I guess there are two things I'd like to pick up on that. One is your recognition of a positive policy intention on the one hand. The question, I guess, for us and for us to be looking at in future is, what does that mean in terms of delivery? And that can tend to be a recurrent theme. Yes, we want to do this, we're not quite sure how we're going to do it. So wanting to see some progress against that. And then the other point you made, which is, how does this policy intention get joined up across policy sectors and interests and priorities, so that the result is greater than some of its parts. Can we just explore a little bit the Fair Work Commission? Tash, I'm going to come back to you on this in terms of, I know it's early days, what kinds of things would you expect to see coming out of that, and over what sort of time frame?
I think that's a very good question. I think the Commission's got a hard job ahead of it, I think, because we have to recognise that the driving change in employment ultimately will come down to a shift in culture amongst business and the wider economy. And obviously the Welsh Government have got limited levers through which they can force change. They can encourage change through procurement policies. We've seen the ethical code, the code of conduct for ethical procurement. So that includes some stuff in there around zero hours contracts and pay. We've seen the linking of the Fair Work agenda to money being tapped into through the Economic Action Plan. But obviously there's only so far that can really have an impact. And I think time is ticking.
And there's a huge amount of uncertainty in the economic mix at the moment, isn't there, Chris, from a broader perspective?
There is, and unfortunately there's also the spectre of universal credit for people who work coming down the track, and I think that's likely to be a source of great uncertainty and stress for people. People who are already dealing with uncertain part-time work are now likely to end up being pressured by DWP to find even more work, when actually it may not suit with the other challenges they face in their lives.
Yeah. And there's a strong gender angle to that as well.
Absolutely,
I think there is a real concern with universal credit, that the way that it's designed is going to exacerbate a lot of the issues that we already see that women experience. It incentivizes part-time work over full-time work. It tries specifically to encourage people into low-hour, insecure work just to get working. And there's very little incentive for a second earner to even go out to work in the first place. So I think it's a real challenge for this agenda and sort of the wider tackling poverty agenda.
I think it would help actually build on Tash's earlier point about the importance of the foundational economy if the Welsh Government were actually more aware of the fact that working on the foundational economy is likely to have a disproportionate focus on the working experiences of women, because that's where many women are working. And actually turn that into a positive in terms of, for example, encouraging greater flexibility of work in those practices, greater access to childcare and so on. And at the moment, I think, because it's a relatively new agenda, that's an aspect of it they haven't picked up on.
I guess the danger there is, there's more airtime given to the idea of a foundational economy, and that conversation is very much current amongst policymakers and politicians, isn't it? How much that's reached a wider audience and a recognition of what that means is debatable, I would suggest.
Oh, absolutely. Because it's an early agenda, there's a chance to there's more of a chance to shape it and build more of a gender analysis into it.
And I think the focus on the foundational sectors office is another opportunity. One of the things that came through strongly in our research, particularly with those working in care, was the disconnect between how roles in that sector are perceived with the reality of them.
Yeah.
It's seen as a low-skilled,
low-pay, low-status
sector and role to work in, when in actual fact, there's a huge amount of responsibility on people who are going into people's homes and providing this kind of personal care. And that isn't reflected in pay, and it isn't reflected in conditions. And this disconnect and the perception is really causing problems from a recruitment perspective, from a retention perspective. And what a lot of people said to us is, like, well, how are we supposed to attract people into this profession when they can take a job in a supermarket which pays more.
Absolutely.
And is
yeah.
less stressful
and
with less responsibility.
There are issues there, I think, in terms of the procurement agenda of local authorities for contracted
mm-hmm.
out care, obviously, and for some of those for those terms and conditions not being the kinds of things that we would want to see, and the difference between care provided by local authorities and care that is outsourced on the one hand. I know that that whole bundle of issues is obviously high on the agenda for Social Care Wales in its new incarnation, and high on the to-do list. The professionalisation of the sector, and what that then means
mm-hmm.
for, in terms of attracting and retaining people and through the curve. Claire, can we go back to a little bit about, before we wrap up, stagnant poverty rates over the last decade?
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people in poverty are women. What is it going to take to make sure we actually make progress on the agenda? Because I think there's a sense that we know where we are,
mm-hmm.
we know what we need to do. How are we going to get there?
I think that we have to stop using a gender-neutral approach. I think the gender-neutral approach disadvantages women, because women are unable to engage in the workplace in the manner that the system expects them to. The one size fits all approach is not applicable to women, and we need to use a gender lens to try to understand how we can have negative consequences as a result of this gender neutral approach. We need to look at the data, which we've already talked about before, that I think is absolutely key. To show them what the problems are, and we need to address procurement, childcare. We have to look at all the basics, but through a gender lens.
Great, thank you very much. Is there anything else that anybody would like to add in before we wrap up, Chris?
No, I just think the other thing that we need to address fundamentally is pay rates,
yeah.
and addressing discrimination in pay is a fundamental issue, because at the moment. It does keep people in very fragile and rewarding work.
So there are some recommendations, I think, in terms of tying programme and grant funding, for instance, and subsidies to organisations that making sure that there are clear links to making sure that people are paid the proper living wage, the real living wage, aren't
mm-hmm.
they?
Absolutely, and in a sense that has to become a core
yeah.
approach to funders. We're seeing it more in the third sector, where actually people are building,
yeah.
in a sense, refusing to fund non-living wage posts, and I think that has to become more common.
Yeah, great. Natasha?
Yeah, and I would agree sort of with a lot of the points that Claire made there about the fact that actually a gender-neutral approach often means being gender-blind.
Yeah.
And the reality is that men and women often are not starting from the same point, and that needs to be recognised so that policies are responsive. But I think in terms of the decent work agenda, it's important that a sectoral approach is taken as well.
Mm-hmm.
The two sectors we looked at, while they do definitely share some challenges, the specifics do differ, and there are specific challenges in each of those, and the same approach is not going to deliver the same results. So it's really important that we do take that sectoral approach to understand how we can effectively make sure that anybody accessing work in Wales is accessing fair and decent employment.
Great, thank you. So a detailed and nuanced approach to sectors, and particularly making sure that the data is in place to make sure that things are gender aware, knowing what the difference is at the moment and what we can do about it for the future. Thanks very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.